Welcome to the Studying the Bible podcast, where every Thursday, Pastors Dylan Dodson and Brian Androsian study a book of the Bible, verse by verse, to see what is being communicated and how we can use it to grow in our relationship with Jesus. We pray that today's podcast can help you grow just a little bit closer to Christ.
Well, hey, and welcome back to our online Bible study through the book of James. In this session, we'll be in James chapter 3, verse 13, through James chapter 4, verse 3. Now, last time we left off in the first half of James chapter 3, where James is talking about our tongue and our speech and how powerful and how destructive that it can be. And before that, he was talking about our dead faith. And really, the entire book of James, again, is showing us, is walking through what does it look like practically for our faith to impact our actions and our daily lives. And so last session, again, was our speech. This session, again, is going to be focusing, again, on our actions and how our faith impacts what we do. And so after talking about how our speech matters and we need to be careful what we say, he says this in verse 13 of James chapter 3. He says, "Who among you is wise and understanding? By his good conduct, he should show that his works are done in gentleness that comes from wisdom." So again, remember, as we've been going through James chapter 3, wisdom for James is not just merely intellectual. It's not just knowing things, but it's doing what you know you should do. Or in other words, wisdom is something that is lived. It is something that is shown, and we see it through our actions. And so what James's point all throughout this letter is that we know someone is wise and we know someone is spiritually mature by how they live and by how they conduct themselves. Good conduct reveals wisdom. That is how, again, we know that someone is wise and understanding. You're not wise simply because you're older or simply because you've done a lot of things in life or because you have a lot of experience. James points spiritual maturity and wisdom that is after the Lord is demonstrated in how we live. So again, when he says, "Who among you is wise and understanding?" By his good conduct, we actually see if someone is wise and if someone is understanding. And then in verse 14, he then says this, "But if you have bitter envy and selfish ambition in your heart, don't boast and deny the truth." In other words, to boast, what he's saying here is to boast that you have wisdom, that you are spiritually mature, that you have understanding. To say that you have that, but then you have things in your life or you have selfish ambition, you have bitter envy against other people, you're jealous, or in other parts of James, your speech is not controlled, you show favoritism. Like, all these things shows us the truth that you are not actually as wise as you might claim to be. And so he's saying, don't claim to be wise, don't claim to be understanding if you're not pursuing the Lord, and if your actions in your life betray this kind of idea of claiming to be really wise, because again, wisdom is demonstrated. You can't just say you're wise, you can't just say you're spiritually mature, you can't just say you have understanding. It's demonstrated by how you live. And so if you say that you are wise and yet you're envious and you're bitter and you're selfish and you're prideful and all these things and some of the other things that James is talking about, he then says this in verse 15. He says, "Such wisdom does not come down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic." Right? Those are some strong words. What he's saying is people who live like this, who deny what God is asking us to do, who go their own way, people who live like this don't have spiritual wisdom. Again, just because you say you're wise or just because you say you're spiritually wise, it doesn't mean that you actually are. Instead, this demonstrates an earthly or even a demonic wisdom, right? It's not from the source that you claim. Again, James here is writing to believers. And so the audience of believers, some of them, I guess, are claiming that they are spiritually wise, that they have wisdom, and yet their actions deeply betray what they say is true about them. He says this, that false wisdom, then, that does not lead to good deeds is not from above. That is not actual wisdom and does not honor God and love people, right? Such wisdom is earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. That you may actually be wise, but not you don't have the wisdom that you claim that you have. Verse 16, he then says, For where there is envy and selfish ambition, there is disorder and every evil practice. There is disorder in every evil practice. Now, this word disorder here is another form of the Greek word that is translated as double-minded in James chapter 1, verse 8, and James chapter 3, verse 8. In other words, what he's saying here is that true wisdom does not manifest itself in envy or selfish ambition, and only a double-minded, only a disordered person can claim to be wise and live this way. Again, this is not saying that you have to be perfect. It's not saying that you're never going to sin, that you're never going to make mistakes, that you're always going to be perfectly loving and honoring God in everything that you do. That's not what he's saying here. Double-minded or a disordered person, however, is someone who claims to be following God, who says they're pursuing Jesus, who prays to God and wants blessings in their life, and yet their every other day, their normal day-to-day actions kind of betray or kind of show that they really don't care about the things of God. They really just want to go their own way and really want God to use as maybe some sort of cosmic genie, if you will. Right? So this person is disordered. They are double-minded. They claim to be wise, and yet they live in a way that is completely contrary than how God would want them to live. But then in verse 17, it then says this, "But wisdom from above is first pure, then peace-loving, gentle, compliant, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, without pretense." And so here James is showing us what true wisdom is. He talked about what true wisdom isn't, which is people that are envious, prideful, selfishly ambitious, and some of the other traits that he's talked about throughout the book of James. And now he's going to say, if a person is actually wise, here are some of the fruit, if you will, that you will see in their life, right? This, in other words, can bring to mind the fruit of the Spirit, maybe in the book of Galatians, the kind of the same things that are happening here, that love, joy, patience, fruitfulness, compassion, self-control, all these sorts of things. It brings to mind the fruit of the Spirit in Galatians as well. Again, the point is that wisdom is lived and it's felt and it's experienced, right? Wisdom produces a love for God and a love for others. And so people who consistently live like this, not that they're perfect, but the trajectory of their life is gentle, is full of mercy and good fruits, is peaceful, is loving. This type of person reveals that they actually have true wisdom, which again, continuing in this thought in verse 18, he then says this, "And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who cultivate peace." The fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who cultivate peace. In other words, wisdom produces peace. And this is completely opposite of what James says in James chapter 1 about anger and how our anger can often get us into trouble. A wise person who is loving and gentle and forgiving and graceful produces peace not only in themselves, but in the environments and in the people that they interact with, right? This is the fruit of wisdom. It's not double-mindedness or division or disorder, but it's pursuing Jesus. And now if you think of it this way, peace is a great description of what we experience around wise people. I mean, just think of some of the maybe the mentors or a parent or a teacher or someone that you've really admired or made a great impact on your life. Probably there was a sense of peace when you were with them. I remember some friends and mentors that I've had in my life or growing up, and when I was around them, I felt encouraged, I felt loved, I felt like, man, things are gonna be okay, even if I was in a crazy or hectic season, right? I think peace is a great description of what we experience when we are around wise people. And that's what James is saying here. They cultivate this idea or this persona of peace, if you will, because they are trusting in the Lord and they are not pursuing division and they are not double-minded. And so with that said, in James chapter 4, verse 1, James says this, continuing this, I thought, he says, "What is the source of wars and fight among you? Don't they come from your passions that wage war within you," right? These passions that are pulling you in different directions and cause wars or they fight or divisions, right? The opposite of peace that we want to experience. So what James is saying here is division, and particularly in this context, may have been an issue that the audience of the book of James, the original audience, was experiencing. It may have been an issue. And so this could be one of the reasons why James write this letter, because there's judgment, there's favoritism, there's clearly some fractions going on, some factions going on, and so he's saying you need to pursue peace and not division, right? What he's saying here is they are not living in wisdom, but their own ambition, their own selfish ambition and passion. And because when we all go our own way, we all pursue the things that we want to pursue at the expense of other people, not taking in consideration the needs and the desires and wants of other people, it can lead to some pretty sad and divisive situations, right? Wise people, what he's saying, wise people and wise leaders don't live like this. Right? This is not wisdom that comes from above, right? If we're all going our own way and we're all after what we want at the expense of other people, this is someone who is not a wise person. When we live like that, we just demonstrate that we are not as wise as we might claim to be, because wise people and wise leaders don't do that. And so in verse 2, he says this, he says, "You desire and you do not have. You murder and covet and cannot obtain. You fight and wage war. You do not have because you do not ask," right? In other words, bad and unwise decisions and actions lead to bad outcomes, right? Selfish ambition, going after what we want, leads to division and double-mindedness and hurt. And so then he continues on by saying, he says, "You do not ask God for help because you are focused on your desires and what you want," which means you do not have true wisdom. He says, "You desire and do not have. You murder and covet and cannot obtain. You fight and wage war. You do not have because you do not ask." You're not actually pursuing me. You're not actually asking what I would have for you or have for your community or have for your church or have for your family. You're so focused on what you want, and therefore you don't have true wisdom. And so you're living life in a way that's contrary that a person with true wisdom who's actually pursuing Jesus can live or would live. And then he ends in verse 3 of the last verse we'll read in this session. He says, "You ask and don't receive because you ask with wrong motives so that you may spend it on your pleasures." He's like, so first of all, you're not asking for true wisdom. You're not actually asking for me to grant you, to lead you into the ways of peace and love and mercy. In that when you actually do ask, you don't ask, you ask with wrong motives. You ask because you want something. You ask because you want your desires fulfilled. You ask because you're more focused on what you can get than helping and loving others. In other words, you are asking for selfish ambition and personal gain, which is a problem in this section. Selfish ambition is an issue, which kind of shows that maybe we aren't as wise as we think we are when we're so focused on our own needs and our own desires. And in this section is showing us, this is what often leads us to trouble. It's not, now to be clear here, he's not saying it's wrong to ask God for things you desire. It's not wrong to ask God for good gifts. It's not wrong to ask God to bless you or to help you or to give you strength to get through various situation. However, if you have no desire to honor God in these situations, that's where we have problems. So you absolutely should pray. You actually should ask God to walk with you and to help you. But you should make sure that your motives are pure. You should make sure that when you ask God to bless you in a certain way or to provide for you in a certain way or maybe to open a door in your life, that your motives are pure, that you desire to use it for His glory and for the good of other people. The point that James is saying is not that you shouldn't ask, but that you should, and you should ask for true wisdom. You should ask for God to draw near to you and so that you can demonstrate that you have a heart that has been changed by Him. Don't ask for selfish ambition or for personal gain, because when we do that, when we pursue our own desires, that is when divisions break out, fights break out, and people are hurt. If you are a wise person and if you are an understanding person, you will pursue God and you will love others and you will ask God to guide you through the power of His Spirit to help you towards that end. And so I want to leave you kind of with three main ideas from this passage as we do in each session. So the three things that I think we can pull from this passage are these. The first is this, that wisdom, again, is lived, not thought. Wisdom is lived and not thought. It's not just something, you can't just claim to have wisdom, but it's actually demonstrated in how you live. Just because you are maybe older or you've had a lot of experiences or you've done a lot of things, that in itself doesn't give you wisdom. True spiritual wisdom and understanding comes from pursuing Jesus. It is lived and it is demonstrated, not just thought about. Second thing we see is that selfish ambition prohibits wisdom. selfish ambition and your own desires to get what you want or to get what I want prohibit us from living in spiritual wisdom and maturity. Selfish ambition gets in the way. And so when we ask God to move in our life, we ought to make sure our motives are pure. And that at the end of the day, more than anything else, we truly want to honor God and love others. And then third and finally, we see that God grants the wisdom to those who seek him. That is James' point here. He's not saying you shouldn't ask. He's not saying that it's even bad to ask for things that you might want. We should ask for good things. And ultimately, we should ask for God's wisdom to give us the strength to live how he has asked us to live, to help him make it possible for us to love people the way that they're meant to be loved, for us to impact people the way that God would have us impact people so that as many people as possible can see and experience the life and the grace of Jesus. God grants wisdom to those who seek him, that he desires to give us wisdom. We see this all throughout James. He desires to give his sons and his daughters good gifts. And his gifts might look different than what we assume that they look like, because at the end of the day, if God loves us and cares for us, the best thing for us is for us to grow in a deepening relationship with him. And so God grants wisdom to those who seek him. James is saying, ask for wisdom, pursue God, and then as you do those things, it will be demonstrated in how you live that you are actually a person of wisdom and spiritual maturity.